Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg, and this is Side Note,
a podcast where every episode we tell stories about and then debate a controversial topic.
And then we research and splice in all the mind-blowing shiznit throughout so you are entertained while simultaneously learning.
Today we are talking about breakfast. Greg is going to tell us about his breakfast-induced constipation problem, and I'm going to let you know how I grew up on literally Pogos and Pizza Pops and like basically trash for breakfast and how that has impacted me long-term in my life. And then we are going to have a debate over the age-old question, should you be eating breakfast at all in the first place?
Today's Side Notes will be presented by myself, Greg, Mitch, and Rachel.
Hey friends, let's get into it.
Hey.
Hi.
It's the Ross from Friends. Hi guys. Or he does that.
Oh my god, what? Ross
wow.
From Friends.
It's like, no. You aren't part of culture, were you?
Oh my god, what do you mean? I obviously know who Ross from Friends. Pivot! But
no, he goes,
is that
hey. Whenever he's sad and they're
yeah.
Like, what's wrong?
Okay,
I did that because I wanted to bring up something which is the phrase that Monday sucks. Mondays
what?
Suck. You know,
what?
Like just like, and I was wondering, I feel like I've been in this loop my entire life. And
wait,
never
I'm sorry.
Out.
What does Ross saying, hey, Monday, like,
he says
link
that when
that
he's
me.
Like in that kind of mood. Like,
okay.
And I was like, it's Monday, and I just want to talk about how Monday
yeah, Ross
suck.
Is very Monday. Phoebe's Thursday. Continue.
Yes. Phoebe's Friday, okay?
Phoebe is my favorite character. Yours.
Phoebe's
what's yours?
Phoebe,
yes.
Obviously.
I feel like that's every gay.
Okay, I just wanted to say, how do you get out of the loop of Monday sucking? Like, my entire life, it's like Sunday blues, Monday sucks. And it's like, why am I living in this insane repeated cycle of not being able to just be like, here's how I make Mondays better?
Okay, so I listened to one meditation podcast yesterday.
For the first time in your life. Suddenly, I heard it like blasting on the speakers, and Greg was like, I'm feeling really great, Mitch.
I had a bath, and I listened to a meditation podcast, and I think that, honestly, you need to understand that you need to become the ocean, and there will be waves.
I cannot. No.
Excuse me.
That's not how I make Mondays
yes,
better.
The waves are the Monday and the Sunday, and that's the wave, and you need to be understand that you are the ocean and that those waves will come, and when you're in them, you just need to understand that it doesn't matter.
That
if I feel this way, I'm
going
to get out of this, and it's fine, and you will see that you will be elevated through
I do
that.
Not believe you right now. You
I'm actually not kidding. I literally this morning shut my eyes with my coffee, and I was like, Greg, it's the wave. Be the ocean. And it worked. Because I was having anxiety. Okay, whatever. I don't need to defend this because I meditate.
Okay, let's get
but
on with it.
It is the wave, be the ocean, and we will get through this.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
Mitch, you go first because, you know, you have vengeance.
Okay, mine's a study I just saw come out today, but it's also linked to one I saw like about a month ago, and I thought, hey, I also kind of want to make a video
whoa,
on this.
Whoa, you read a lot of studies.
And we just released a video on brushing your teeth, and this video is related to that. So it's about
this
fluoride.
This video, you mean this?
Sorry, this
say.
Fact, this study is related to the brushing your teeth video because it's about fluoride, which goes in the water to help protect our teeth. So we have fluoride in our toothpaste, and many, many cities in the world have fluoride in their water system.
Is this something the government has control over, right? Like
exactly.
Iodine? Okay.
And so a few years ago, like it was 5 years ago, Windsor, Ontario voted to remove fluoride from their water. And Alaska also did this. And a study just came out that shows, surprise, surprise, huge increase in cavities in Alaska and Windsor. Windsor's spike in tooth decay was like up 51% in, I think it's between kids.
Why would one vote to not?
Well, there's been some weirdly, it's like I was looking into it and there's no official organization that's like opposed to the use of fluoride. Fluoride in water. In fact, almost all legit institutions promote it, but they're still, it's kind of like
they don't want the government
movement.
In their life.
Maybe it's a bit of that, and maybe it's a bit of like, fluoride is a corrosive chemical, like we shouldn't be putting this into our water system, but it's obviously changing. It's like, it's a protective measure. And so Windsor, as an example, is now...
Oh my God, is Windsor embarrassed?
Probably. They have to spend $850,000 just to reintroduce it into the water. Isn't that crazy?
What do you mean? What, like, to, like, dilute it in?
No, that's the cost, I guess, of the program to reintroduce it after they voted it out 5 years ago. So it's not cheap.
I mean, that's
Windsor's not
honestly,
a very big city.
Though, but I'm also... Oh, okay. Because I'm like, that's also not as much money as I maybe would have thought.
Yeah, but,
I'm like, that's
but
an indie
for
movie
a city
budget.
Of like Toronto, Windsor maybe has like a few hundred thousand, 300,000 people or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. It's close to Detroit. I love Detroit, and on no offense, Windsor, but all I know of it is driving through it to get to the D.
But yeah, that I thought was interesting. It just kind of goes to show, like, let's just listen to the science. And it's fair to have concerns. It's fair to say, hey, fluoride's corrosive. Should we not test this? But it's like it has been tested in small doses. It's actually like good for our health to help prevent it. Not good for our health, but helps prevent against cavities and problems with teeth, especially.
So like literally everyone in Windsor is going like 1, 2, 3. Oopsies. Mm-hmm.
All right. What did you learn this week?
Okay. So mine is about penguins. My interesting
Ooh.
Fact. Because seriously, everyone loves penguins.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's not a single person that doesn't like penguins until they're gay. You know what I mean? Like, until the penguins are gay.
Oh, you mean like homophobes existing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
There's like those cute little penguin boyfriends that
like
took care of the
egg. Penguins, literal blockbuster. Like, whenever Planet Earth tries to market their show, they're like, there's penguins.
Exactly.
Okay. So, penguins in the Antarctic, they found by studying their poop. that they now have pathogens that have only been able to be passed on to them by humans. So whether it's from tourism into Antarctica or literally scientists going to Antarctica to study them.
Oh, no.
But the other thing is, like, we're always like, humans, like, Anthropocene, like, we're the worst. But they're also like, maybe it's migratory birds coming from, like, humans are
right.
in South America
spreading
and, like,
those
going
diseases.
To Antarctica.
Okay.
But they found that they have the bacteria Campylobacter. Teary Jejuni.
Oh, wow. That sounded like a song.
Which, that's exactly how you pronounce it, so do not question me. And it's the bacteria that causes you to have food poisoning. So they, like, and it's a human pathogen, so it's, like, literally somehow these penguins have got it. Whether it's the tourists vomiting overboard on their cruises or whatever, they ended up with the pathogen that actually causes food poisoning, among with many others. So they obviously are saying
penguins.
That this could be an issue with the penguins. 24 species of, like, I think, obvious. I don't know. I'm not going to say some random number, but it wasn't all the penguin species that got it, but 24, which is a significant amount. So it's just a new issue for them. Chilling on their Antarctica. That's now all these humans coming in, and then now they're starting to get a little bit sick.
Oh, is it, like, deadly? Should we be worried?
Well, it's more of those, like, in the future we need to be concerned. Like, obviously, some penguins have died, and some penguins have gotten sick. It's more just, like, they didn't really think about the impact of that. But I also didn't realize, but humans can pass on pathogens to animals. Like, you forget about that.
Okay, I vote that humans can no longer explore, like, beautiful nature landscapes.
And it's literally, like, that's, like, so... You're like,
We've explored enough.
We're planning a trip to Panama to, like, go to the rainforest.
Yeah, we have to stop that. We can only go to space. There's no more exploring Earth
and
destroying
Earth.
Oh, my God,
that's... All right, fine.
Right?
You don't have to
save
tell
the
me
penguins.
Twice. Don't have to tell me twice.
Story time.
Story time.
Story time.
Story time.
You know, this podcast is about controversial subjects, and I think there is nothing more controversial than the concept that is breakfast.
Mm-hmm. That's actually
true.
Like, not a joke.
Like, if you bring up breakfast, if you're ever like your date's getting a little awkward, your Tinder date, it's like, what do you eat for breakfast? Like, that always works. Mm-hmm. So breakfast for me is a passion. It's something that I love. It's something that I've grown up with. It's actually a part of my literal identity.
Ever since I've met Greg, I was like, you have to eat breakfast. You're not going to eat breakfast. You're going to die.
Okay.
We're going to get into that later.
Exaggeration much, but okay. So my parents recently came up to me. They're like, Greg, can you stop talking about us on the podcast? So I'm not going to say my parents. I'm just going to say when I woke up in the morning, this is what was served to me. So My family, cereal. That is what we ate. Like, I never really even thought about the concept of, like, eating something else for breakfast.
And when I met Greg, he did not know how to make an egg.
Okay, I think that was a joke. I was kidding.
No, it was not. This is, I'm just saying, reinforcing that you only
ate
cereal.
I was really embarrassed about that, but now that I think back on it, I'm like, I literally only at home had
You're
eggs.
Like, I was a revolutionary.
No, we only had eggs at, like, Christmas. Like, as a, like, those the concept of a special occasion, like egg breakfast, like bacon and eggs, never happened. It was cereal every day.
Okay.
But, like, not only was it, like, cereal can seem exciting, but it was, like, the main staple in my house was shredded wheat. Do you know what this is?
I do know what it is, but I didn't know it existed in the way that your family ate it till I came to your house one time.
So I literally, when I would drive by farms and see, like, stacks of hay, I was like, that's shredded wheat.
Yeah,
like,
it's
that's
not,
what I eat.
I knew what shreddies was, or,
yeah,
like, the little sugar-covered ones.
Interested in why shred is in all of these words. But, so shredded wheat is this weird, like, rectangular block of wheat that the way it was posed to me to eat was that you run it under hot water so it gets soggy and warm, and then you add milk to it, and I loved it. And then I would put, like, all brand buds on it.
Like, in your hands you run it under hot water?
No,
or
you,
like,
put it in the bowl.
Okay.
You put it underneath the sink / tap. You turn it to warm. You warm it up, and then it gets soggy. You empty the water out and you add milk.
That's like a, that you have to go to jail for that.
It's not like it says to do that on the box. I'm like, I have no idea where this came,
like,
from. This is my culture.
You're
okay.
Sick.
This is white culture.
Why can't you just let the milk soak into it?
Literally good question. You'd have to ask the ingenues, the entrepreneurs of the shredded wheat movement. But okay, so that was one thing. All brand buds, also Shreddies is what we got, and our sweet cereal would be Life. Do you remember that cereal?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I actually like Life.
Like, me,
like,
too. I love Life.
Check squares, right?
You like Life? Actually, love Life.
I love Life.
Sorry, so maybe you need to go to therapist because I love Life. But that was it. That was, like, most of what we got. Oh, and also never name brand. So it was always, like, wheat squares. Like, I would never get Shreddies, you know what I mean? Because it's, and, like, I still to this day think it's true. Like, you look at the price, it's like, there's not much of a difference between the wheat square and the shreddy, but the shreddy is a dollar more.
Yeah, almost always I agree in terms of, like, when you try both, you're like, they're literally the same. And there's also, like, people say that the factories often make both. Like,
yeah, we have a video about
that. If you
have
Cheerios
and
you have a name off-brand, like Circle, Sweeties, or whatever, it's like they're often made in the same exact factory. But there are times when I've had off-brand ones that are mimicking another name brand, and they do taste different.
Placebo.
No.
Placebo.
No.
Placebo. In
sometimes
your head.
It's
in your
not.
Head.
And may I just say quickly, cereal, if you've ever had corn pops in Canada,
what's that?
Amazing,
wait,
amazing
what's that? What's
sugary
that?
Cereal.
Okay.
They're like these round little puff
yellow
balls.
Yeah.
Corn pops, great. Don't you dare go to the States and tell me corn pops are good, because they're disgusting. They're like flat. They're
okay,
a fully
I'm
different
confused.
Cereal.
What are you talking? Oh.
It's the same brand, the same imaging, but when you get it out of the cereal box, it's a fully different
it's
thing.
Like flattened?
It's like, and it tastes different, and it's like they just ruined corn
I
pops.
I love those little
idiosyncrasies,
those changes, those differences in culture between Canada and America. Like, we have milk in a bag. Yeah, if you're American, believe it. We have milk in a bag. Milk also goes to cereal. That's why I brought it up. Mm-hmm. So obsessed. Obsessed with bran. Obsessed with the idea of bran. Ate it my whole entire life. Sometimes I would see sweet cereal, and my parents were so good at it that I was actually like, that's disgusting. So then, flash forward. It's whatever the year was that, again, we're going to talk about Bangladesh. And I eat bran every morning, like, on, like, to the T, 8 a.m., big bowl, all brand buds, even like maybe those weird stick brand versions, like whatever, brand. We go to Bangladesh, we arrive, and we are almost immediately on this sort of like weird, what was it? A boat?
Yeah, we were like traveling on this like rickety boat that there wasn't much going on. It was just like we had to get from point A to point B.
It was like a tourist
boat. Oh, you
boat.
Mean when we were on the actual Sundarbans
trip? Yeah,
like
a rickety boat. What do you mean?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, we spent 3 days in the Sundarbans, which was like a jungle. Is that
yeah,
what you mean?
So
okay.
It was like we slept in these rooms. It was incredible because there were people making us food on this little boat where I don't even know if there was an oven. It was the most delicious food ever. It was like 5 days. And on the last day, they served us ice cream. It was so hot. And I was literally like, I don't understand.
Where did this come
yeah,
from?
Yeah, and it was like, we watched them. Like, it was a small boat.
There
was
wasn't
like,
a fridge on the boat.
Yeah, there wasn't even really like a roof. Like,
I mean,
it's
there
just,
must have been something.
It was like very, like, not fancy. Mm-hmm. But I had full-on constipation. I did not. Many other people on this trip did not suffer from constipation. They suffered from the opposite.
I don't think any. Yeah, it was literally.
For
like,
me, I was like, okay, this, like, the way that I am, like.
Didn't get enough fiber.
The way that my. Yeah, the way that my gut, like, is reacting to this situation is, like, that I'm not going to the bathroom. And I thought that maybe it had something to do with, like, the food, the change in diet, and all these things. No access to the internet. Come home. And I start really getting deep into looking at, like, what happens when you get constipation while traveling. And a big issue is potentially that if you eat cereal or fibrous North American concepts of breakfast and you don't get that anymore, you can have constipation if you change your diet.
I'm sorry I stole your punchline. Like, I didn't realize that's what you
were. Oh, no, no, no.
I just, like, spoiled the fiber joke.
It wasn't a joke. It's, like, a point that I was actually, like, okay. And from that point forward, I diversified my breakfast. It was not all bran. It's sometimes bran on top of.
So it's
nuts.
Just like your body's so used to having high fiber that then without,
like,
it.
Literally keeps you regular, but what happens when you don't have access to
okay,
it?
Okay, this is an argument I have against, like, doing anything healthy, okay? And
whoa.
I'm just going to say it, and we're just going to pretend it's not problematic. But sometimes I think, like, when I start to exercise, then if I don't, I feel shitty. And then I'm like, that sucks. Because, like, when I didn't exercise, I just, maybe I was feeling shitty all the time, but it was just, like, the baseline, and then I didn't know I
Wait,
was feeling shitty.
Wait, but literally
shitty.
All you said is that when you exercise, you maybe start, that you feel, okay, you kind of just said that you feel shitty all the time. When you exercise, you start to feel better.
But I didn't know I was
don't,
feeling,
you feel shitty.
No, I didn't know I was feeling shitty before. Now it's like, like,
but you just,
you know, like, if you stretch every day and then you have a few days you don't stretch, you're suddenly like, I feel so crappy today.
Well, because you have to bask in the glory of how good you feel the day that you stretch.
But you don't know. It's just the baseline, okay? I just mean your fiber baseline is way too high. And
oh,
if
yeah.
you just were like me, like, I've never been constipated because I don't have a healthy fibrous diet.
Well, I did change it after. And the last thing I'm going to say about this same trip is we went to Nepal. And at this point, it was Bangladesh, India, Nepal. When we were in Nepal, I was like, I cannot eat rice and lentils for breakfast anymore because that's all that you would eat. What's it called? Dal?
Yeah.
Dal. So they eat like what a lot of North American, I'm going to say for myself, like white people would think of as like a dinner meal at a South Asian restaurant. But that's what they eat for breakfast because they're obviously a different culture. I mean, we were sitting with this.
Which I was
there.
So into.
Yeah, yeah. But no.
Well, eventually I was
we
like.
We all were like, please.
No. The problem wasn't breakfast for me. I love a hot breakfast, but it was more like difficult to just
yeah.
have the same
But for
kinds
me, I was like,
all the time.
For breakfast, we're going to do this one more time. Okay, interesting. But they said, we met these people in Nepal who had actually lived in America for a while, and they felt the exact same way about cereal. They were like, how? Like,
we didn't
I can't.
Meet these people in Nepal. It was my family.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We stayed with my family.
How are you related to them again? It was.
They're like my mom's cousins.
Your mom's cousins. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sorry. They were living in America, and we're like, we need to go home so we can get our Dal breakfast because we're always out eating eggs and cereal, and it's making us feel sick. And I was like, that's so interesting to think mm-hmm. about that, like, dichotomy. Anyways, that's like, if you want me to keep talking about cereal, I can because it's
poop.
A literal passion. And what?
Poop.
No, I don't want. No, that's not my passion. Cereal is my passion, and they go hand in hand sometimes. Whenever we travel around the world, we're always very surprised at what people eat for breakfast. So today, right now, we're going to break down some of the popular types of breakfasts around the world.
Everybody wake up in the morning. It's breakfast time. Let's go.
In Canada and the U.S., we focus on cereal and milk products like yogurt, hashtag Chobani. We love eggs, toast, pancakes, and of course, bacon or sausage. Just picture what you eat at Denny's.
Pancakes, bacon and jam, butter, toast, and berry jam.
Moving down in North America geographically, we get to Mexico. Breakfasts here often include old Spanish and Portuguese dishes like migas, which in Mexico is a mix of scrambled eggs and tortillas. They also, of course, have birthed the huevos rancheros, which is now a trend here in Canada. And the basic dish consists of fried eggs served on top of tortillas with salsa and chili peppers and onions and cilantro, refried beans and avocado. This is what I always order on a brunch menu. It's delicious.
A check for two. We've enjoyed brunching with you.
Getting to the Caribbean, fruits factor in significantly to what you eat in the morning.
Jamaica actually has a focus on a fruit called aki, which is in the same sort of family as a lychee. They'll also eat it with fried plantain in the morning. Fruits can also be paired with salted fish to provide some of the savory flavors. Moving into South America, in the morning you eat a lot of meats and eggs. In Brazil, a favorite breakfast dish is feijoada, which is a soup, actually, consisting of beans and meat. When I was in Colombia, breakfast revolved around arepas, which is sort of like a sweet corn cake, and it's often served in the morning with eggs and meat, but sometimes just butter and jam. Now let's move across the ocean to Egypt, where there's a dish known as foul madamas, which can be eaten in the morning, but also at lunch, and it's made using fava beans and chickpeas. In Ghana, breakfasts often include wakiai, which is made of rice and beans. Moving geographically north to Europe, there's always a little bit of starch in the morning. For example, Germany prefers to serve its breakfast with freshly baked bread. And of course, France, you know, is home to the croissant. Moving east to Asia, fish and rice will be really popular in the morning. And in Japan, there'll also be a focus on tofu. While in a place like Thailand, there will be rice and there will be fish, but there'll also be pork. This is just a small sampling of what people wake up in the morning and put into their stomachs. And we want you to tell us what you eat every morning. Use the hashtag SideNotePodcast and tell us. For me, I would write hashtag SideNotePodcast. Different types of cereal mixed with nuts and dried berries and milk. And if I'm lucky, I'll eat an orange. Wow, that is boring.
Cereal is not my passion, but I did quite like breakfast growing up. But I'd go into phases, okay? So for me, I would start some days, I just like wouldn't eat breakfast. But
crazy.
What you need to know about my family is that they're the complete opposite of Greg's. And every morning for breakfast, there was cereal, okay? There was sometimes cereal.
Also,
but
I still go to your house. Amazing.
We have this treasure cupboard in our house. That's literally like a ginormous cupboard that you open and you get like your Cinnamon Toast Crunch, your Fruit Loops.
It's like
you
a
get
nutritionist nightmare.
Yeah, it's just pure sugar foods, Corn Pops, all these
things.
Oh,
also some chips.
Captain Crunch, there's chips, there's hot chocolate. This is like the magic popcorn drawer.
There's
like
granola bars, but the ones like covered in chocolate.
So like my experience with breakfast growing up, that was only half of it. The other half that I leaned into a lot more was like Pogos and Hot Pockets and like literally these things that, see what I mean? I love hot things for breakfast.
Pogos, never had one, didn't know what they were.
You've not never had
no,
a pogo.
No, until I went to your house. Explain. Does everyone know what a pogo is?
A pogo is just
I thought they were carnival food.
Oh, some people call them corn dogs. Yeah. So at a carnival, you get corn dogs, but they're basically pogos.
That's you when you say a corny dog. You're a corn dog.
They just literally have a disgusting hot dog covered in like batter bread that's like deep fried.
Wait, what is a not disgusting hot dog? All hot dogs.
Oh yes, now I hate hot dogs probably because I have an aversion from eating so many as a kid. But in this way, they're much better. Like when they're wrapped in like a deep fried bread,
like a batter,
and then you like put some mustard and ketchup on, and
for
then
breakfast.
That was my breakfast nearly every single morning. Either that, or a pizza pocket, or a hot pocket, which are different, and I have my very strong opinions on. Pizza pockets are good when they're three cheese, no meat in them, but hot pockets are good when there's meat in them.
Okay, kind of a connoisseur, and honestly, if you opened up like a hip like West End like hot pocket restaurant, it would do well.
Oh, that's like a good idea. Also Pop-Tarts. Those were another thing if I were to have sweet, because you could heat them up at the same time. You could put them in the toaster, you could put them in the microwave, and it was just like a warm, sweet, gooey treat. This is what I had for breakfast like my entire life.
Like what? No.
My entire life.
Was there never a discussion of you can't have that pogo for breakfast. You can't do that.
We come from different backgrounds. My family didn't know that. I'm not joking. Like I'd
what do you
mean never didn't know that? I'd never heard of brand in my life. Never heard of a like making sure you eat healthy. To be honest, but like growing
were you
up,
ever like my parents were always like not like punishment, but they were like you can't like they like to be like to you have two cookies if you eat your broccoli. Like,
oh,
was there ever that
okay,
kind of
yeah,
stuff?
Okay, yeah, no, no. So, like,
you
my
give
mom
a kid
would,
a pogo first thing. How are you going to, like...
Well, my family also had much more people in it than yours did, right? Like,
yeah,
we had more
kids.
Four kids growing up, and then two more came later, and then we had two dogs, and then, like, a cat. And it was just, like, a busy household, I think. So having quick, easy breakfast things in the morning was, like, essential for my parents to be able to deal with, like,
true,
the kids running
but
around.
Cereal's quick. Gargoyles.
I guess, yeah. I guess you're right.
But like, it's
okay. I'm just saying health wasn't a concern. But so flash forward to my life now. And recently we did a video on our microbiome. And we took these tests to figure out how diverse our guts are.
And our microbiome is what not?
So your microbiome is like the bacteria that lives in your gut and in your body that is now they're realizing it's like affects your mood and your general health. And
it's like if you're a scientist, it's like the microbiome and you're young and you're trying to figure out what to study might be a good one because it's just like it's trendy. It's on the
Yeah, it's a part of biology that's like untapped.
But there really is a lot of crazy
something they found out now is it's like what you eat before the age of 6 defines your microbiome for the rest of your life. So we do this microbiome test, and Greg has like a out of you can get between 0 and 1, and like no one can have 1 because that's infinite diversity. But more diversity is generally good. Greg has like a 0.96 or something,
no
right?
No deal. But you, contrary to popular belief, based on my 99.9% Northwestern European genealogy, I'm quite diverse in my gut.
Yes. And then I take it being like, oh, well, like I'm relatively healthy now. I don't eat pogos for breakfast. I like a 1.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
0.7 something. I don't know.
No, 0.7, not 1.7.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I know. 0.7, sorry.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I tried to check you for a minute.
But also people need to know that the reason for that is that in a lot of these processed foods and things like this are a lot of like chemicals or lack of nutrients that make your microbiome less diverse. And actually, it's not just eating bran that helps, but in fact, they found out fiber is like a really good prebiotic for your gut bacteria, but also eating diverse types of foods, which I think is also like when you eat junk food per se, you're getting just like a small slim pickings of nutrients. Mm-hmm. That's why... Sorry, I'm just trying to explain why yours would be less diverse than mine based on eating pogos for breakfast.
Yeah.
But
sad to me.
But
how can parents
you can change keep your microbiome?
Up? How can we keep up with all this? You cannot really. You can minorly change it, but they said like so much of what I ate as a kid defines my microbiome for the rest of my life.
Yeah, too late.
Unless I get a fecal transplant.
Yeah, do it. Get someone else's poop up there. No, like you can do it. You can change it. And you know what? It's true. Like even like... Whatever. You had pogos for breakfast. You only live once. Like, that's amazing.
True. I had a really good youth.
Yeah, and the only benefit of this that we will end on before we move into our debate is that whenever I go to Mitch's house and I see this cupboard of gluttony, I can't resist myself. And
that's
I go crazy.
True.
And I eat so much food because, like, no one's stopping me. I'm like, how are you just allowed to eat whatever you want?
I don't know if anyone out there like has this experience. I don't know if it's common, but I had all these awful foods, and now I feel like part of that allowed me to like resist temptation in a weird
yeah,
way.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sure there are plenty of people who like had it and
no, but I think that
to.
There is something there.
But Greg will come over and my family will have like a huge bowl of candy or a huge bowl of chips
it's,
out
like,
for everyone.
I wish I could explain to people. I'm like, there's not enough humans in this house ever at any time to warrant this like bowl of like. Sometimes there's literally a bowl of like chocolates, candies, yeah. chips that's separate to the cupboard, and I'm like, okay, it's just out like. Are you serious? Like, no one's going to stop. I'm going to eat all of
it. And I remember me and my little brother were just sitting with you chatting, not realizing you had eaten, like, 18 chocolates.
And I was, like, ripping
and
hearts.
And then started, you were like, I'm going to barf. And we were like, oh, my God, Greg, we've had one. Like, why did you eat so many? And we just realized in that moment, like, we're surrounded by it all the time, so it doesn't
yeah,
feel like we need to
it's
have.
It's true.
Like, we all have always have access, so you only eat it when you actually want it, kind of thing.
Exactly.
Anyway, so thanks, Mom and Dad. I'll talk about my parents for once for giving me the awful gut back. That you gave me, but also thanks for giving me like the best youth.
And immunity
of my
to
life.
Gluttony.
Yes.
So I also took a test to look at my gut diversity, and like Mitch, it was not so good. But really quickly, what is a microbiome anyway? So you are made up of roughly 30 trillion human cells. Whoa, so many. But believe it or not, there are other cells inside us that outnumber those cells, and they are bacteria cells, and they are what make up your gut microbiome. And having a diverse microbiome, meaning lots of different species of bacteria, is related to improved physical and mental health. But how do you get a good gut? How do you up your diversity? Here are five things that could help. Number one, you're just born into it. Seriously. Babies that were born vaginally instead of cesarean section get a lot of good bacteria from their moms, and that translates into adulthood. Number two, you could get a poop transplant. Wait, what? You could literally put the poop of a super healthy person into your body through a procedure that is similar to a colonoscopy. It's like an enema in reverse, but don't think about it too much.
Literally, ew. I can't.
Okay, number three, if you don't want to get a poop enema and you weren't born vaginally, you could just take a probiotic. Probiotic pills contain billions of live bacteria, with the intent that these bacteria will populate your gut. But there is some skepticism over their effectiveness. So number four is alternatively, you could eat your probiotics. Fermented foods like kimchi, sauerkraut, miso soup, kombucha, and yogurt is loaded with them. Number five is to feed the good bacteria you already have in your body foods that they like. So these foods are known as prebiotics. They are foods like leafy greens and fibrous foods, as well as veggies such as artichokes, garlic, and onion.
Just wanted to take a quick second, as usual, to thank you guys so much for watching and sharing our podcast. You've been like tweeting us and Instagramming and tagging us. Love it. Just wanted to send a reminder to keep doing that and like our podcast in the apps that you use and download it. Allegedly, the elusive download is important and it helps us, you know, get on the different charts and stuff like that. But ultimately, you sharing our podcast with a friend or family member or your teachers or your colleagues is really awesome and we appreciate it. We love making this and that just kind of makes it all continue on and we want to continue it forever. For you. But thank you so much. We'll get back into the show now.
Based on the fact that, as I said, my cultural identity is breakfast, I'm going to be arguing.
Surprise, surprise.
In this debate, that breakfast is a pro. I am a pro breakfast. And you are what?
I am a no-go for breakfast. A con.
Okay.
So, Greg, I think you should go first because that's like a classic statement. Like, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So, are you ready?
First, yes.
Are you ready? Okay. You can start now.
Debate time.
So, your body, as we all know, relies on nutrients to survive, to move, to think, to exist, okay? After a whole night of sleeping and assuming not eating anything, it makes a lot of sense just intuitively that you need to wake up, get some glucose, get some nutrients in there, and get some liquids in there. So a famous nutritionist from the 1960s said you should eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper. Not the gay sniffing drug that loosens your anus, but a pauper, P-A-U-P-E-R, means a poor person. Rude. So according to the latest evidence, though, this is essentially true-ish, not necessarily to that extent. Again, 1960s, there's more advanced knowledge to this.
Yeah.
And they think that we should be consuming around 15 to 25% of our daily energy intake at breakfast. This is according to science. So a large growing body of evidence.
1 minute.
Oh my gosh. Supports the claim that breakfast is a really important meal. Not necessarily the most important of the day. That's not what I'm arguing. I'm arguing that it's important. Okay. So, one study found that adolescents who eat breakfast have been shown to have better memory than their peers who skip breakfast. Interesting, because I like to enjoy memory. Also, a study of students found, like, students between the ages of 9 and 11, so we're talking, like, pretty young, still probably being told to eat breakfast or not by their parents, found that they actually got better grades.
30 seconds.
Better grades when they ate breakfast. So, that's a pretty interesting study. 5,000 students, pretty big. Wide net, but if the breakfast was junk food, hashtag pogos, it literally was negligible.
What, they said pogos?
Like, they literally, like, according to the study, breakfast consumers were twice as likely to do well in school, although the connection didn't apply to the 20% of students who were eating junk food for breakfast. Okay.
5 seconds.
So eating breakfast helps regulate your blood sugar, your insulin levels, and also skipping the meal, skipping your first meal. Are you serious? We ran out of time.
Yeah.
Well,
interesting.
Okay.
Oh, nope, nope. That's the way the rules
work.
We're
going to continue to talk after. And I just honestly think that is obvious.
I believe we follow rules in this podcast. And okay. Is it okay if I use studies that are like modern? Do you mind? Or do you want
me to also use
like 1960s? I'm joking.
That was a quote to help get people to like think about it. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I shouldn't have wasted my time with that damn famous nutritionist from the 60s. Anyway,
okay,
your turn.
Yeah, you ready? You ready to time me?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me when to go.
Gah.
So I need to state unequivocally that breakfast being the most important meal of the day is a full lie, and that skipping breakfast may actually be good for you. So there is some correlation between breakfast eaters having a lower risk of things like chronic disease, they weigh less, and some of the facts that you said. But as we know, all correlation does not equal causation, and a lot of these observational studies are just that. And so when they retested many of them in randomized control studies of people skipping breakfast versus people eating breakfast, it has no impact on weight, which is a lot of the reasons that people talk about eating breakfast, that it actually like impacts your metabolism. In fact, some people say that it kickstarts your metabolism in the beginning of the day, which has been proven false. The other thought is that if you don't eat breakfast, you're going to eat more at lunch, which might be true, but they found that skipping breakfast can reduce your calorie intake by up to 400 calories a day. So even if you are eating a little bigger lunch, overall, you're not compensating for that. Now, you might have heard of this little trendy thing called intermittent fasting, except it's not just a trend. The study bears out that intermittent fasting has a method of where you fast for 16 hours and then eat for 8. And so most people are eating between lunch and dinner only. And the evidence suggests that this method helps improve metabolic health and increases weight loss. And you've also probably heard that breakfast jumpstarts your metabolism, which I've said before. It does not. Eating a lot of food as soon as you wake up can also make people nauseous. Not for everyone. If you feel sick, if you feel bad by not eating, just do it. But stop telling us, all of us non-breakfast eaters, that we have to, otherwise we're not going to be healthy, okay? Get over
it. Wow. Well planned. Maybe you just didn't have as much information. Okay, whoa.
You gave us a quote, okay? Get over it.
I want to talk about this. I'm not talking about losing weight. I'm talking about being healthy. You were talking a lot about this idea that eating breakfast makes you lose weight. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about overall health.
Not
eating
just
breakfast
weight,
is important.
That it's your metabolic health is good when you fast.
Yeah, that
the
last
human
study,
body
but the ones before that.
Is designed, this is something my nutrition professor taught me, is that there are four There are four stages of hunger to starvation, and the human body would naturally go through three of those. Obviously, starvation being the last is not a phase that humans and like would want to put themselves in. But as like hunter gatherers, as like our historical evolution would have bared out, you would have eaten a lot of food, you would have been full, and then you would have gone through the other three stages as you waited for more food.
So this is the argument of intermittent fasting.
Is that that it's actually good for your body to rotate through the metabolic states, not going all the way to starvation, but that hunger is an important part of your body's metabolism.
Intermittent fasting has gained a lot of attention in the past few years. So real fast, get it? Fast, like fasting? Okay, what is it and why would someone do this? There are a couple of popular options. Some people fast every other day, which is known as alternate day fasting. There is also the 5-2 diet, where you eat normally for 5 days and then restrict calories to a quarter of your daily needs on the other two. But the most popular is time-restricted feeding, sometimes called 16-8, where you would fast for 16 hours and then eat within an 8-hour window. Most people would do this for weight loss, but there is some evidence that it could help you live longer. I'm gonna live forever. So how does this work? The 16-8 diet focuses on time restriction rather than calorie restriction. So you literally eat the same amount of food, but over a shorter period of time. During the 16-hour fast, your gut releases the hormone ghrelin, which is known as the hunger hormone. When ghrelin is released, it signals the breakdown of fat as an energy source. Fats are broken down into ketone bodies, which provide more energy than glucose. This has been tested on mice, and they found that it, yeah, can reduce inflammation, reduce tumor growth, help the mice live longer,
I'm gonna live forever,
and lose weight. But the studies on people are more limited and has not been able to consistently show that patients lose weight on this diet. Like so many things, if you are considering intermittent fasting, it should be done under the supervision of a registered dietitian. And experts say that any diet that encourages restrictive eating schedule really should be approached with caution.
So, interesting point. I find intermittent fasting. I've been reading a lot about it recently, and you're right. It does work. But the way that you intermittent fast is quite an intense process. It really... I do think that it's important to know that a lot of the things that we're talking about are not people who are deciding to commit to intermittent fasting. We're talking about people who may be on their on-the-go life, or like you said, they're nauseous in the morning. They're skipping breakfast, but they're still going to continue to eat the rest of the day. That if you can find it within yourself to eat a balanced breakfast, then I really do think it is the healthiest option, and breakfast is important because of the reason that I said and because of the way that...
So what I want to retouch on is this idea of correlation, because they found that people who end up being healthier and generally feeling better are also people that tend to smoke less, that tend to be more organized. People who tend to eat breakfast every morning are just generally not better people, but they're just better at those aspects.
You're right. We can say the correlation causation thing all day. And in fact, that's pretty much all this podcast really is. Because when you make a debate with science, we're going to be pulling from studies that are always going to be trying to make a causation that maybe is not necessarily 100% true. Like when we talk about those 5,000 students and the fact that the ones who ate breakfast had better grades, you're right. There's so many other things there. Parents who make their kids eat healthy breakfasts maybe
are probably the ones who are more invested. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm agreeing with you on that. But the point is, and what I'm trying to say is that eating a healthy breakfast is good for your body. You can't say that it's not. And I think one thing that we can agree on is I'm not saying it's the most important meal of the day, but unanimously and all the studies that I read, they are saying it is important. It is good for you. It's good for a balanced diet. It's good for your brain. It's good for nutrition.
But I'm not saying it's not good. There's a difference between saying it's good for you and it's important for you. Those are two different things. Like, my argument isn't that having breakfast is actually bad for you. It's just that, hey, we all have different bodies. We all have different requirements. We all have different cravings. Why are we telling people who just actually don't desire to eat breakfast in the morning that they're being less healthy?
And then encouraging those people to make sure that they're continuing to be healthy throughout the rest of the day.
But having breakfast isn't just about being healthy. Like, lots of people don't eat healthy breakfast.
Yeah, it says British children under 10 years of age are currently consuming more than 50% of their recommended daily allowance of sugar at breakfast. So it's true. I agree. Like, you can't just assume breakfast, consuming anything at that time, like eating Pogos for breakfast, is actually not a good thing. Then you're right. Maybe it would have been better to skip. And especially if all these kids are eating so much sugar. And also in Japan recently, a scientist found out, he did a test that obviously is extremely flawed. He gave people ice cream in the morning and then other people nothing. And the people who had ice cream in the morning performed better on cognitive tasks and stuff. And it's created a trend in Japan where people are eating ice cream for breakfast.
Oh, no.
But it's like, no, of
that
course,
wasn't
ice
the point, necessarily,
better
yeah.
than nothing.
Okay.
But anyways,
interesting.
Again,
obviously I did not touch on cognitive function, so that may be true, but I think generally that's true of any time. If you need to have performance, you do need fuel for your body. But I guess I'm also just arguing for the people who don't want it. Like, some people feel
some
physically
people really
sick when they eat breakfast.
Okay.
And I actually used to be that way, and it took me a long time.
Yeah.
I feel like you had an influence on me in a way, and I was like, yeah, maybe breakfast is so good for you. Yeah, if you're going to go do something that's demanding, you probably, say even you're going to go work out, you probably should eat something. I mean, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a health expert. I don't want to actually give that advice. There might be reasons not to.
Well, I have all the advice to just
No, but there might be reasons that some experts would say, you don't always have to eat right before you work out. You can eat after. I'm really curious where this idea of eating three times a day even came from.
Well, according to my research, it's very much cultural influence thing. Also, business loves that. Cereal companies love that.
Right.
And so that three meals a day is it's just something that fits in the confines of capitalism, the 9 to 5,
end of
works.
Our, cultural structure.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious.
It's a very British.
thing.
What historical Western. Humans who weren't living in our society where work was 9 to 5, when were they eating? There probably are many cultures right now that eat like smaller meals all throughout the day. I don't actually know.
Well, that's also like a trend too. Like to eat like that is actually like...
Don't eat gluttonous, but
you
eat lots
of small studies
meals.
That will back that up.
How did we end up with 3 meals a day? It actually wasn't always the case. In fact, early colonial folks were used to eating just one single meal.
I ate one meal a day for 30 days, and here's what happened.
I don't know how they did that, but it was referred to as dinner, and it was right in the middle of the day. This was sandwiched between breakfast and supper, but at the time, that was more glorified snacks than proper meals, which was usually literally just leftovers from dinner.
I am so full! Those are the best scraps I've ever had!
The drastic shift actually occurred during the Industrial Revolution, and that's because people's work schedules began to change, meaning that dinner was pushed later and later into the day, and as a result, lunch was invented. On top of this, the new sedentary lifestyle that the revolution encouraged led to an evolution in breakfast as folks became more and more interested in healthier options. But the truth is, 3 meals a day actually isn't even a standard today. Some places like Argentina and Greece are accustomed to having 4 meals a day, while others like Jamaica focus on 2 larger meals with lots of snacks in between. For me, food is food is food, so as long as I get to eat, I'll be happy.
With this podcast and with all of science, what's so interesting is like you can find studies to back your things up, and the overarching opinion is something that you need to form, and like meta-analysis, for example, are important for that reason, but even those can be flawed. Mm-hmm. It's why science is so interesting and so exciting, because it's so nuanced.
Yeah.
But it's also why it's a hard thing to make everyone interested in, because everyone's like, just give me the answer.
And to even like believe, because sometimes it's interesting, it's like even if something is healthier, I feel like I won't feel better if I do it until I do it for a while. Like exercise as an example, like used to make me feel crappy after I would do it. I feel exhausted. I feel lethargic. I need to go to bed. But
tiring.
I've been doing it for a while now, and I'm like, I actually get energy from it
now.
And now
you eat breakfast and you didn't before. And now.
And so I wonder like what different studies would bear out in all these different ways. When you study different people who come from different starting positions, the results might actually be different, right? Like for me to start eating breakfast might not have had the same impact on me. In fact, maybe it would make me feel worse before a cognitive test. But now I've eaten breakfast for so long, maybe it's better for me. I don't know.
So we're going to end on a couple of these like funny things that I found as information. So OJ, cereal, and milk sales are all on decline. You know what I mean?
It's like, oh, really?
OJ, well, cereal all and milk, that's ones, my yeah. dream. That's my culture.
Milk
that's
and cereal.
And OJ, they're all in decline, and they think it's because of like the fast-paced lifestyles that everyone's living now. Mm. Like they're not wanting to sit down and eat breakfast. They're wanting, or maybe not even eating breakfast at all. So like those are the concept of that is like disappearing. And 40% of millennials who were surveyed by Mintel in 2015 said cereal was an inconvenient breakfast choice because you had to clean up after it.
True. You
and
can't
it's
just like
true.
Toss. Like,
we
it's
always
just,
like leave our bowl. We're so lazy that it's like, literally, we've maybe gotten to the point where millennials are like, give
versus
me
having like a granola bar
exactly.
where you just like toss
like
it in the garbage.
Like something
that
I can just like, or a pogo, just throw
or
it out.
Soylent.
Exactly. So like, it's kind of interesting to think that even like the concept of that way that we used to eat breakfast might even be disappearing. And finally, last thing I'll say, when it comes to nutrition, I just finished this like long article in the magazine about it. And it's like, it's so hard to give one person a nutrition advice because it's so related.
We all
to,
have different bodies.
Exactly.
We all have different mentalities that help us work in different ways.
Yeah, it's like broccoli, literally the chemicals in broccoli can be so important for people suffering from a specific disease at a specific age. And to say, then you say, oh, that's
are you talking about gout?
No. But it's like that actually is the most healthiest food choice for that person. People want to hear eat broccoli to make you healthier. But it's like, it's mostly like eat broccoli if you're this age and you're suffering from this disease to get healthier.
Right. So, I mean, broccoli is obviously generally healthy for many people, but I see what you mean.
Like
some people should focus
like,
on it as a
and
food.
And it has like specific nutrients in it that could actually combat something that you're suffering. But in general, that's why it's important to speak to a nutritionist
and speak about your own history. Mm-hmm. And we can't really give unanimous advice, but breakfast
I'd say to end on my note, like, listen to your body. Listen to your body, you know? Like, and, but be willing to try other things. Like, sometimes it's worth, and you can't just try it for one day if you really want to commit to something. You got to give your body time to honestly adapt to, like, suddenly taking in calories in the morning if you want to try to go to breakfast.
But pogo's a no-go, okay, for breakfast?
I don't know about that. Like, I feel pretty good about that. Anyway, okay. Listen to your body / eat breakfast. That's what Greg thinks. Thank you for listening. We're excited for 2019.
Yeah.
Are we?
I am, but I'm like, isn't that what everyone feels at the beginning of every year? I don't know.
That's true. Like, well, maybe we'll do a little check back in about 2019.
And I'm a little bit like, why isn't it in your face amazing yet? You know what I mean? I'm just like, it's been 3 days. Like, why haven't I won the lottery? Like, it's supposed to be a good year. Like, I'm a little bit like, come on, 2019.
You've won the lottery because you've never bought a lottery ticket in your life.
Trip.
But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Let us know what you want to hear from us in the year 2019. You can use the hashtag #SideNotePodcast. That's what the hashtag is, right? And, you know what? I finally figured out how I can repost people on Instagram who tag me in it. I finally figured that out.
Oh my god!
I didn't understand until literally someone didn't explain this to me. I think Greg should have taught me, but he didn't. So if you tag me in your side note promos, I'll obviously share it. I'm excited to do that. And otherwise, you can message us at the handles @MitchellMoffitt or @WhaleWatchMePLZ. And
we'll see you next week for the year.
See you next week. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's JUVEDERM.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's JUVEDERM.com.